The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. And basketball is back, baby! We got a lot to talk about today. We're very excited, as always. Jenkins and Jones is hosted by my good buddies, Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
With Jethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubbas?
And I'm Guardy B, a.k.a. Mike. We are recording at the actual literal ass crack of dawn here.
This man Mike hurt, bro. Scrambling. You know what I mean? I appreciate you. I just want you to know that.
My face is puffy as fuck. We're locked in. We just finished watching basketball like 2 hours ago. We're ready to talk some hoops. But before we get to actual basketball, are we Ben Simmons fans now? I feel like I feel like I might need a Ben Simmons jersey after this week, because this dude is so fucking out of pocket. It's crazy.
I mean, he's the only one in this whole fucking, you know, fiasco who's sticking to the shit that he said. You know what I mean? Like, he said what he said and he meant that shit. He wants out. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the Sixers have shopped him before. Fucking Doc said, I don't know if we can win with this guy. And Bede was like, yes, you know, Ben was thinking it up, which is like we discussed. That's true. But you don't say that shit publicly. You know what I mean? But it's just wild. Like, he is dead ass serious about never playing for them again. And the Sixers need to realize
10
that.
Toes down on not giving a fuck.
Right.
He's the only person that makes sense in this scenario to me. You know what I mean? I think Doc is weird for what he said and how he's acting. I think fucking the organization is weird as fuck. You know what I mean? Like, we don't want you the whole fucking summer, and you expect a 25-year-old to come in there all happy and ready to fucking practice, nigga. That shit ain't sweet. You know what I mean? I get why he's acting the way he is out there practicing with a fucking phone in his pocket. Gets kicked out and goes to the strip club, because all that shit makes sense. When the org doesn't want you, the coach doesn't fuck with you, you get kicked out of practice you don't want to be in, and then you go to the motherfucking strip club at motherfucking 12 in the afternoon, nigga. That make a whole lot of sense to me, nigga. Shit.
The funniest shit to me was when they said why Doc kicked him out, because he didn't want to participate in a defensive drill. That's funny enough in itself, because you're like, you know, fuck this drill. You know, I'm one of the, you know, me and Embiid are the best defenders on here. I don't need to do this shit anyway, and I'm never going to play for you guys regardless. But the funniest part was they said he literally took his ball and went home. Like, I wish I could have seen Doc screaming on this man and Ben just picking his ball up and walking out the fucking gym.
All 16 of them fucking lumbering out the motherfucking
ducking
gym.
Under the door frame.
Right. Looking back and then ducking under the door frame. Like, bitch. I love it.
The reporting was Doc asked him to participate in the drill. He said no. Doc asked him to participate in the drill again. He said no again. And then Doc said, all right, man, why don't you just go home? Now, I've seen this happen in high school basketball practices.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is the fascinating thing to me, and I'm kind of surprised this doesn't happen more often. All of these NBA dudes at this point in the way the league is capitalized, they all have fuck you money halfway through their career, the superstar dudes.
Yeah.
And he's really the first person to say, I have fuck you money. I don't care
so
if you're
fuck
not
you.
Giving me.
Yeah. He's the first fuck you money nigga to say fuck you. You know what I mean? And good for him. And good for him, nigga dog. Like, I think this shit weird as fuck. You can't go out here talking shit all summer and then want to be homies when the season start. You suspending him a game, he probably like, thank you, bitch. Cash my check, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think he's the smartest one in this whole shit. You know what I mean?
I would say I enjoy this scenario, because I actually sort of empathize with everybody. You know what I mean? Like, Simmons is like, but
you
I love
empathize with Doc. You empathize with Doc fucking Rivers.
Well, because at this point, what's he supposed to do?
He already fucked him. He dug his own motherfucking grave, though.
I totally agree, but now he's sitting in the grave and he's not dead yet. So, you know what
I
mean?
That's on him. That's on that nigga. Shit. I'm not, like you said, I'm not selling carrots for fucking, or trying to trade carrots for pudding. You know what I mean? Shitting on the carrots. You feel what I'm saying? That's on that nigga. I've been using that analogy a lot. Since you said it, man, I've been telling niggas
that shit was brilliant.
That shit was motherfucking mwah.
But I do empathize with Doc because he does still have to coach the team, and management is now telling him,
Doc started all of this, bro. I don't believe.
Ben started all of it by passing the ball in the paint.
Doc started by fucking having Danny Green on motherfucking Trae Young in game one of the motherfucking shit and let him get cooked for fucking 40 and a half, nigga. You know what I'm saying? That nigga's giving up. How many 3-1 fucking series? He's a fucking patron saint of fucking 3-1 fucking comebacks, nigga. You know what I mean? On the ass end of that shit. Nigga, fuck Doc Rivers, dog. This is an anti-Doc podcast, at least from my side, dog. I have no motherfucking empathy for that motherfucker, man.
And I don't even think Doc is in a bad situation. This isn't like your star turning on you and now your job is in jeopardy. Like, yeah, I think everyone on the Sixers knows what this is. You know what I mean? They know that this is some bullshit. They know Ben gotta go. They know this little pony and dog show dance bullshit they're doing is some bullshit. I don't think the team is like turning against Doc for this. I think they all know what it is.
I guess what I mean is like, as a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, I empathize for the moment of looking at a dude and saying, why don't you come over here and join this drill? And he looks at you and says, no.
People was looking at Doc real funny. You know what I mean? This is the best circumstance for Doc Rivers, where everybody's talking about motherfucking Ben Simmons instead of Doc Rivers. So
Sixers fans are looking at Ben Simmons as the whole instead of like root Doc, of their problems. Nigga. And not a dude named Glenn, 100%.
Doc handled this all wrong, because I would have trolled the fuck out of Ben. I'd be like, okay, you don't want to do a defensive drill? All right, this is what we're going to do. I would have got like our shortest point guard. I'd be like, okay, we're going to do a defensive rotation drill where you are going to be the guy with the ball. And you're going to cut. No one's going to be on you. You're going to cut to the basket. All right, and I want you to close out on him. I'd be like, we're going to do this play. Does this look familiar, Ben, at all? Does this ring a bell? That's the shit I would have been on. Like, if you want to be petty, we can be petty, motherfucker.
That's so funny. But I do. Okay, so what I was gonna say was, there's Doc, but the person I really empathize with is Joel Embiid, whose press conference yesterday was a fucking masterclass, bro. He was just like, I don't know this man. I don't care about this man.
I could baby him, but it's not my fucking job. I haven't talked to his ass since he's been here. Joel Embiid was a fucking, like, he probably was close to winning MVP if he didn't get hurt. He was a favorite before he got hurt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Played great in that fucking series, right? Great fucking player. They took a real big step this year, but he has to deal with this bullshit. You know what I mean? He's trusted the process. You know, it's worked out well for him. Hasn't worked out well for the team or the players. So, I hate it for him.
The process was untrustworthy.
It was. I mean, he did his part of the group project. Nobody else did. You know what I mean?
But the process was like, I have two tickets to tonight's game. Just follow me into this alley over here. You're going to pay in cash? Follow me over here and I'll sell you the tickets. You know, right. That was the process. And everyone was like, yeah, totally. But
he's a nigga in the group project that did A-plus work and is still going to get a C on the motherfucking paper. You know what I mean? That's a nigga I feel bad for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How the org has handled it has been fucked up. How Doc handled it has been fucked up. Ben, I get why he's in his way, but he's being real petty. You know what I mean? And passing up on that motherfucking layup, fucked up. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why, like, from Embiid's perspective, you're like, I looked like the MVP. We figured out a way to win with a point guard in 2021 who does not want
to
score.
To shoot. Who
which
refuses
is
to shoot.
Very difficult to do.
Which I wouldn't be mad if Westbrook.
We'll get there. So Embiid's going, literally, all I need you to do is make layups.
and now he doesn't want to make layups. You know what I mean? Come on, dog.
It's a tough situation. All right. I will say, by the way, the divorce analogy I use on the last podcast, this is exactly what it looks like, bro.
That was beautiful, too.
There's no, it just hums along with quiet resentment. Like, this is too volatile a situation. It was always going to be, that's why, to me, it's crazy that they had him come back in. Like,
crazy.
Pay the man to stay away, not dominate opening day of the NBA with people laughing at your franchise. Like, that would have been worth the $1 million you would have paid him this week.
Facts.
All right, let's talk about some actual basketball. Two games on opening night. So fucking great after all of the off-season storylines, which haven't been as lighthearted as our off-season storylines often are in the NBA. It was great to have some actual basketball back. Tyler, what'd you think about the Bucks-Nets game? I said the Bucks next game.
The Bucks next game.
Hey, man. Motherfucking 7-16, bro. Low expectations.
It's the Butts versus the Necks.
Right. That sunrise on that ass for real, like Tyler said.
Hey, I'm gonna totally overreact and go back to what I said about why I think the Bucks are coming out the East is that I think Giannis is taking a leap and the Nets can't stop anybody. And that's what we saw last night. You know what I mean? So, I mean, look, bro. I am trying so hard not to overreact on the steps that we've seen Giannis taking these 5 or 6 games or so.
Now let's do it.
Overreact. Overreact.
Let's have a contest. Don't try hard. Who can overreact the most this morning? I like that.
Okay, well, shit. He's going to be the MVP. He's going to be, we're going to talk about him as an all-time great. Like we're going to talk about this peak that he has as an all-time great peak, like a Shaq-esque peak.
Oh, wow. If
this motherfucker was out there Euro stepping, he was working the mid range and the three ball in preseason.
Off the dribble.
If we see that this season, we got to have some discussions, bro. Like, I'm ready to go all out and say he'll be go down as the best international player ever, too. Like, let's get all the way fucking crazy with it.
I think he has definitely ability to be the best international player. He looked like the best player in the world to me last night. Mm-hmm. He looked like the coldest nigga touching a basketball in the world to me last night. You know what I mean? The Bucks look really, really good. They always look good, great. I think that's not the best of what we'll see the Nets. I think the thing with the Nets is they could score enough not to defend anybody. Well, not to defend great. Then they had better team defense towards the end of the year. But they don't have that scoring without Kyrie. You know what I mean? I think it's wild that Kyrie is just at home. The motherfucker begged. We saw him talking to KD like, nigga, bring that ass to fucking Brooklyn. We gonna kill niggas. And this nigga at home just watching KD get cooked after they got beat by, 20? And it felt like 40. And KD put up 30-some. You know what I mean? It's like, dog, you can't, dog. Kyrie, they need that nigga. You know what I'm saying? I need him something for him. You know what I mean? They was missing him last night, but I think they'll figure it out. I don't think they'll be that bad, but I think the Bucks and for sure Giannis will be that good all season.
Giannis is 26.
We got a lot of Giannis ahead of us.
Like, he's entering that part of his career. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think I'm on the exact same overreaction as Tyler. Like, you watched last night, you watch how comfortable he was. Like I said, I'm on Ben Simmons' side in the whole 76ers shit, but at the same time, they've been paying that man very handsomely to spend 1 hour a day in the offseason developing the ability to shoot the ball. And Giannis, after a finals that we have never seen from fucking anyone, apparently put in significantly more than 1 hour a day, adding a completely new element to a game that was already pretty unstoppable, bro. He's 26.
It's unfair comparing anybody to Giannis at this point to me. You know what I mean? Like, the way he, like, first of all, how he's built, like, and how he moves at that size is insane. But also his mindset, nigga. But I think, like, him winning a chip just calmed him down in a way that was good. Mm-hmm. Not in a way that made him want to work. It didn't make him less hungry.
It didn't make him complacent. It made him more comfortable. He's working with house money now.
You know what I mean? It's like, nigga, you know what I'm saying? Like,
he's like,
Gucci.
I got my family.
I got my chip, nigga. I got my MVPs and my brothers final MVP.
My brothers are all rich.
Was it Thanasis? Was that Thanasis? Yeah. He looked pretty solid, too. He getting some little burn now. He was on a Giannis workout plan too, it seemed like. You know what I mean? He gonna give him some good minutes. But yeah, them boys look like the best team in the East. You know what I'm saying? I still think if Kyrie come back though, it's gonna be rough for a lot of teams.
But if Kyrie comes back, does it change that the Bucks scored? Tyler pointed this out last night: 37 in the first, 31 in the third, and 30 in the fourth. And the second quarter, which was the dry spell, they scored 29 points.
Look, it's Kyrie fucking Irving, nigga. He bringing 30 and maybe a 40 piece with him. They'll be okay.
How much is Kyrie giving up, though? Like, he ain't no defensive stopper.
I don't think it adds on to what was given up. You know what I mean? Like, you think he giving up an extra 30? You know what I mean? Like, nah, bro, like, Kyrie bringing a 30-40 piece, and he'll be equally as bad on defense as whatever whoever got cooked. You know what I mean? But that's still a winning fucking formula. You know what I mean? So I think with Kyrie, they're still the best team in the league. But, I mean, the Bucks look great. They look fucking great, dog. They didn't even have all their players. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the other point on the Bucks, and I forget, it was someone, it may have been like Joe Harris or someone. Someone from the Nets pointed this out, I think, in the pregame interviews yesterday. The Bucks also have significantly more continuity in their roster than most of the other teams.
That's like, a deep squad.
They all know what they're doing. You know what I mean? They all know how they fit. There's a clear leader who's a popular dude that people seem to like having be the leader of the team. Like, that shit counts for a lot in basketball.
Oh, for sure.
Ain't no scandals during the offseason with the Bucks, nigga. Everybody know exactly what they need to do, and they do that shit, and they ready when the season starts.
All right, let's overreact to the Warriors beating the Lakers on opening night. I'm bummed out. You know, we didn't have Russ last night. I feel like if he'd been able to play, it could have been a difference maker for the Lakers.
You was talking about a chip at halftime. You was in a group chat like Chip City. Nigga, we was up six. We should have been up 20 and we was up like six. I'm like, but I didn't want to be negative Nancy. But
those
I'm looking
are,
at what's
those are private communiques.
I was like, all right, you know what I mean? That's why I just said I'm gonna focus on Bron. I'm gonna talk about Bron. I ain't gonna talk about the fact that the defense don't look sweet. That defense ain't there like it's been the last 2 years. You feel what I'm saying? And I think Russell will get better. I just don't know if it's better enough to be good.
Oh, he literally has to get better.
No, he will. Like,
you know what I mean?
It
was statistically like one of the five worst games of his NBA career.
He does this, though. We've seen him, like, it takes him a little time to get used to it. But like I said, I think it's harder to be a Russ fan when he's on your team. You know what I mean? Like, I love watching him. I love Russ. He's a great guy. I think he'll figure it out to a degree. I think this year is more fun than good, though.
I mean, I didn't feel like Russ did any knucklehead shit last night. I just felt like the shots weren't falling. You know what I mean?
I mean, but that's so, when are Russ's shots falling?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's we'll see a lot of that. That's what I'm saying, bro. Nigga, like, people like, you know, he got to shoot. He got to keep the defensive, you know, defense true. You know what I mean? Like, no. Keep him honest. No, you don't. You got to be honest with you, Russ. Nigga, you can't shoot. You know what I mean? The defense ain't got to be honest. You got to be honest with you, okay? So I think, like, you know, we need to cap him out at, like, four. If he don't hit, like, you know what I'm saying, one out of the first four or some shit, hey, man, you know, just swing that thing or take it to the bucket. You know what I mean?
Bron and AD looked really good tonight. I mean, last night. And oh, I think incredible. That's always a plus because I think those two have won like 75% of their games when they play together. So they are a fucking incredible duo. So there's always that to take. So I do think that even a subpar Russ, if you get, you know, peak AD, you know, prime Bron, I think you can still win it all with that. I really do.
We got beat by, like, Steph wasn't even playing a Steph game, bro. That was the weakest triple-double I've ever seen in my fucking life. You know what I mean? And Steph was not a factor. We got beat by a nigga named Beelzebub, or whatever the fuck he said, and motherfucking pool. But look,
Beetlejuice took us behind the woodshed.
Right, you got a beat of J behind it. Don't expect a nigga to know the name, dude. Like, it is rude for you to have a beat of J back-to-back. Those two continents in a fucking to start your motherfucking name, nigga. Anyway, Beelzebub, you know what I mean? That nigga and Poole, and that's the thing, like, Poole is gonna be Poole, you know what I mean? Beelzebub, he gonna be that nigga. Steph wasn't even Steph, and they didn't have Klay, and we still got beat pretty handily in that fourth quarter. Really, it was one bad quarter, but I mean, we're seeing Russ trick off layups, we're seeing him miss a lot of shots, you know what I'm saying? Like, the defense ain't there. I think these are problems we're gonna have to deal with all season. So like we saw players be themselves. You know what I mean? And the other two and the Warriors weren't even, you know, we saw a lot of the players that could be really good. One wasn't there in Clay, and Steph wasn't himself.
If I'm gonna underreact to how bad the Lakers looked in the second half last night, what I would point out is exactly what Tyler just said. All I really needed to see in game one was what does AD look like after a real offseason? And I saw everything I needed to see there. Bron looks great. That's not necessarily convincing that he's going to look great fucking 7 months and 100 basketball games from now when we need him to look great. But Bron and AD, you saw everything you needed to see. Russ literally can't play worse than that. Okay, 4 turnovers, 4 points, and plus minus of negative 23. It's fucking...
We'll see.
It was rough. And so, but... He's also a player, and I thought Bron, as the pseudo player coach, handled it perfectly after the game. He said, I told Russ to go home and watch a comedy, hang out with his kids, and throw this one away. He's like, we need him to not be so hard on himself. Like, he wanted to come out and go 20-20-20 in his first game in purple and gold. And I totally understand that feeling. And we know Russ, we knew that's exactly who he was. I didn't feel like he overshot. He shot the ball 13 times. I didn't feel like, I mean, I wanted him to shoot less, but I didn't feel like he was taking it out of people's hands.
No,
it's
none
just
of that.
What
there
Tyler
was
said.
That.
And that was a number one worry of mine, you know, coming into the season. So there's also serious on this team right now. As much as everyone talked about the old dudes, it was the mostly younger depth pieces that are injured right now. And their reserves are fucking banged up as fuck. So it's natural that there's going to be lulls in scoring of an extent that I'm hopeful we won't have when we actually have a healthy team. So
who's going to be the guy that steps up from the reserves? You know, like what is Avery Bradley the secret weapon?
Monk,
you know
Malik
what I mean?
Monk, bro.
Malik Monk. I think he had buckets, but I mean, this is his first game. So I'm not, and I like what I saw with Malik. I like what I saw with motherfucking Bazemore. I thought Bazemore was decent. You know what I mean? He had some nice, he shot when he was supposed to shoot. You know what I mean? He played some good defense.
I was
on
about
Steph.
To say the defense was what was exciting to you me. Because I mean? It's just we need that one dude that you can sort of throw at a Steph or just someone just to get in their way a little bit. I actually think, you know, I not to sound like a total fucking dipshit Lakers fan, but I think not as a guy by himself, but added to that mix, I think THT was really good for them in a lot of ways in that he's a dude who's not willing to just go to the bucket. Like, or he's not afraid to, okay, I'm going to go get 2 points. You know, when everyone was kind of looking at Bron, he's like, give me the ball. I'm going to go get a basket. And when, you know, you have Bron and AD on the bench, we need a couple of dudes like that. That's who Avery Bradley was, I thought, last night. Just, I'm not that worried about what this is supposed to look like. Let me just go get a fucking corner three.
Avery had like 6 points, didn't he?
He hit 2 huge threes right when he got in the game. And that, it was the mentality of that, like, let me just go fucking get some buckets. That I feel like we need from the bench.
Guys, this is not a chip team. And I'm not saying it on some negative Nancy shit. I'm saying it on some just like
weren't called the Lakers and it wasn't LeBron James, you'd
be saying
it's not a
chip team. We would
not
be talking about it. And I'm like, yo, let's just enjoy it. I think it's gonna be fun, and that's all I need out of them. You know what I mean? I wasn't mad last night. You know what I mean? I love, like I said, Bron looked like he was humming motherfucking R&B. That nigga was singing motherfucking, you know what I'm saying, Jodeci. You know what I'm saying? While he was playing, that nigga, like, he had headphones in, chilling. He looked really comfortable. AD looked great. I just don't see, I mean, we're going to get those type of nights from Westbrook where he just can't shoot. They had him like a catch and shoot guy a lot of times. Westbrook just doesn't play that. He has to figure out how he's going to play with that team. I get it. I don't think that's enough to make him better than the teams that are going to be playing in the West. I think they come in about fifth in the motherfucking West, and we get them. They put a nice little playoff push and get booted in the second round. You know what I mean?
Second round, bro.
This is the thing. Like, I mean, I think that the teams at the top of the West are good enough to beat the Lakers, even when I mean, Bron AD gave him 34, and nobody else really showed up. You know what I mean? And I think we're gonna get a lot of those games, and I don't think Bron and AD are gonna get 34 every fucking night. You know what I'm saying?
In Bron, we trust, as Tyler would put it.
Y'all trusted him last year.
In terms of the fit.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but look, either he and AD are healthier than they were last year or they're not. I mean,
no,
it's still going to start and end with that.
I don't think they're as good as the team they were last year. I don't. I don't think they're as good as the team that were. I think the team that won were last year, they could have won a chip, especially with the type of defense they play. I don't think they're as good.
I think they're
hella top heavy.
They'll get there on defense.
They'll get better.
On defense. I mean, I have to believe.
Melo ain't getting better on defense, nigga. And that nigga was... I love Melo. Whenever he shot, I'm like, Melo, I'm yelling that shit. But on defense, I'm like, Melo. Melo.
Melo.
You know what I mean? Melo. I wasn't mad. I'm just like, come on, Melo. You know what I mean? Come on, where the help at, Melo? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, bro, it is what it is. It's going to be fun. But I just don't want y'all to be like, Chip City, you know what I'm saying, and be motherfucking, you know, well, head in your fucking chest for fucking a week and a half after they get cooked. You know what I mean?
Russ is gonna be Russ, and Melo is gonna be Melo, and I'm gonna be me in terms of overreacting to everything the Lakers do. So okay. I apologize for your group chat experience over the next several months. Hopefully, no, Tyler cool. and I are right, and you are wrong. But you've made persuasive arguments.
I hope I'm wrong. You know what I mean? But if I'm right, y'all got a big old hug waiting for you. You know what I'm saying?
This is the best podcast episode we've ever done.
Fuck you, Jackson.
Hey, I don't get to bask in this for like 5 seconds. This is pretty good stuff.
Y'all ain't gonna be all that good either, bro. You know, I don't know.
Jackson had a fucking Cosmo Kramer slide into the fucking group chat last night after that game, bro. He's like, "Hey guys, did everyone watch the basketball game?"
I wanted to make sure you guys were watching. I was trying to be a responsible producer.
All right.
Appreciate you.
Let's talk about my favorite moment from the TNT broadcast last night was Chuck remarking on the incredible strength of the atmospheric weed smell outside of Staples Center before the Lakers game. John, I wanted to ask you as a dude who moved to LA, because a lot of people I know who've moved to Southern California have made this comment that they're like, you smell better weed walking around Southern California than you can purchase in at least 40 states in this country. True or false to Chuck's statement?
That is my favorite part of living in LA, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, nigga. And Chuck was speaking all the way fucking facts, nigga. Yes. You know what I mean? And I bet off camera, hey man, you know what I'm saying?
Let me hit that.
What dispensary? You know, who your plug, nigga? You know what I mean? Talking about he gonna leave his motherfucking suit in the motherfucking hotel. Bitch, you lying. You better get you some of that shit on the way back to the hotel, my nigga, for sure. But yeah, that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part of living in LA. It's like, you smell some good ass weed just driving down the street. You know what I mean? Rather, because she can't smoke. We'll be driving around. She be too happy smelling that shit. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
Soon enough, she'll be back. You feel me?
Basketball season is back, and there's no better place to bet on the NBA than FanDuel Sportsbook. To celebrate NBA tip-off, FanDuel Sportsbook is giving new customers enhanced odds. That's right. Get 75-1 odds on any team to win on October 19th or 20th. ESPN game tonight. I'm very excited for this Celtics-Knicks game. If you listen to our NBA season preview, you know I've got the Celtics to kind of surprise some people in the East, and I think they will start that by getting a big win in the Garden tonight. So that's my pick. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. It's easy to use. It's got fast withdrawals. They've got odds boosts and specials every day, and some big super boosts each weekend. And they've got live betting, so it's easy to place your bet fast during a game if you see a trend you like. So see for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up using promo code JNJ, that's J&J, to get 75-1 odds on any team to win on October 19th or 20th. That's promo code JNJ and make every moment more this NBA season. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. New users only, $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus, $150. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, let's talk about Book Club 2.0, Book 3.
Okay, Jesus Christ, nigga. It's just the third motherfucking book.
The third motherfucking book, Dynasties. by Marcus Thompson. We read the introductory chapters as well as the first two teams, which was the Mike and Lakers and the Bill Russell Celtics. Tyler, this is your pick. Why don't you start us off with, you know, kind of why you picked this and what you thought of these first couple chapters?
For sure. Well, for one, you know, Marcus is the homie. You know what I'm saying? That's my dog. And I was, you know, he'd been building this up for months, and I've been super excited about it. You know what I mean? And it's been a really good read. Like, I honestly, you know, I did not think I was going to be interested in this, like, Charlie Chaplin-ass era of basketball that starts off the book with Mike and the Celtics. But that shit was interesting as fuck, though. But, you know, he starts it off with talking about first chapter, Dynasties Matter. And, you know, the lead sentence of the book is, the NBA's special sauce is hatred. It's like a dollop of sour cream and pound cake batter, or a pinch of cayenne pepper in a latte, which is very much true. You know, people always talk about how the NBA needs parity. No, it doesn't. The NBA's golden years have always been when there has been a dynasty, right? And people tune in to watch the dynasty, you know, carve their place out of history, or people tune in to watch the dynasty crumble, right? That's when you get your casual viewers that drive the ratings up. And he pointed that out in this. He has a table there where he has the highest NBA finals ratings.
He went analytical.
Right. Yeah. He went analytical on this shit. he got damn substantiated the hate with numbers here and shit. And,
there we go. You
know, yeah, and so the highest rated three games are, you know, MJ in 98, game six versus the Jazz. Number two is the 93 finals, game six versus the Suns. Number three is 2016 finals, you know, Warriors versus Cavs. But what jumped out to me is the number 10 highest rated finals game was 2019, game six, Warriors versus Raptors. Motherfuckers tune in that game to see the king get decapitated, bro.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's what drove the viewership on that. And you know, I think it just, you know, further emphasizes this point. Like, you either, that's when the NBA is at its best in regards to viewership, when people are tuning in to watch a dynasty carve their place out of history, or people are tuning in to watch a dynasty crumble.
I thought, well, I mean, when he was talking about, you know, dynasties are behind the growth of the league, you know what I mean? With, I think, the Celtics Lakers, you know what I'm saying? Magic versus Bird. I'd also, and to talk about hatred was a real big part of, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what makes, like, the NBA interesting. I also think racism was a big part of that. You know what I mean? Like, Magic versus, you know, Bird, oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Niggas was like, oh, you know, sure. That's a, you know what
working
I mean?
Working class white dude from fucking the, you know, the Northeast versus the flashy black guy from LA. Dude, of course, you know, yeah, race, I mean? Absolutely played a component in that robbery, no question.
Yeah. But I mean, it was interesting how everybody was so, like NBA people, like, you know what I'm saying, were so excited about the season after the Warriors when there was a lot of parody, and then all of a sudden shit tanked. And they were surprised by, like, we haven't seen... Like, they haven't seen these ratings when there are dynasties in the league. You know what I mean? But, yeah, I mean, like, I will say when he's talking about, like, a lot of these older, like you said, like, you know, George Mikan and shit like that, and how he's the reason why there's a, like, big men were so important for so long in the league.
Because, like, he's 6'8".
Yeah, he's 6'8". And I mean, the motherfucker didn't play in high school.
Right.
He walks onto a college team and is a fucking... He played recreationally in high school, like, just for fun. He walks into a college team and is a fucking All-American by his junior year. You know what I mean? Averages 30 in the league. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, to me, that makes... I'm thinking, like, damn, how unwatchable was this shit? You know what I mean? And I mean, like,
he's getting made fun of in high school for being too big to play basketball.
He hated being tall.
Right.
He hated being... His confidence was worse because he was tall.
And he's shorter than Bron.
I kind of get that, though. First of all, 6'8 at that time is like 7'12", nigga. Like, you're 7'13 at that time if you're fucking 6'8".
Especially,
you know what I'm
he said he wasn't coordinated at all. Like, he was awkward. Like, he was walking into, like, he probably, yeah, I mean, I could see how much he would have hated that experience.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, it just, like, I don't know, like, if they're talking about dudes jumping when they shot, where, like, you know, people were turning on to watch, oh, man, the fantastic whoever that jumps when he shoots. I mean, that's what I was thinking. Like, these were interesting facts to me, but also, like, so when I was reading, I was interested in the facts, but I'm also interested. I was like, damn, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this shit ain't, you know, this shit was unwatchable. But I think dynasties, like you said, are like, you know, casual fans tap in, and that's when the league is the you know, obviously the ratings jump. But like, people tap in to see the circus. You feel what I'm saying?
His storytelling in this book is incredible because, and I wouldn't say I was hesitant. I mean, I like Marcus a lot too, so I knew this was going to be a good book. But I thought it was going to be a lot of stuff that I knew already. Because it's like you're focusing on the stuff that everyone's been focused on the most. That's kind of dangerous unless you really know you have it. And he said in the intro that he read every newspaper article written about these teams, all this stuff. So I was like, okay, he's going to have some shit in here that we've never seen. But I still open that first page and you see the, you know, the George Mikan Lakers and it's four fucking white dudes, including George Mikan wearing spectacles. And I was like, ugh, like this is fucking homework. You know what I mean? But by the second paragraph of the chapter, you're completely pulled in, and all of a sudden now by the end of the Bill Russell chapter, God help me, I like some of these old players that I've enjoyed making fun of my entire life.
Bro, that George Mikan chapter with all those fucking Dick Tracy ass nicknames, I was enthralled, bro. That was a motherfucker, sure. What, Sweetwater Clifton, the first black NBA player, a motherfucker, the Great Sweet. Dane, who was the first power forward. The first owner of the Lakers was a motherfucker named King Boring. I was like, bro, I did not know anything. But another thing that jumped out to me was when they talked about how a newspaper reporter chronicled the first chase down block. I'm gonna read that shit. I'm gonna read it in a goddamn 1940s news guy
let's
voice
go.
I remember one game where one of our passes was intercepted by the other team and this fellow went dribbling towards the other basket. Leo McCaffrey, who played at a rival high school of Pollard's in Oakland, told the Chicago Tribune. Jim raced after him, and as the guy was putting the ball up, Jim leaped and pressed the ball against the backboard. He wasn't called for interference. It was just tremendous timing.
Like, that is the first chase down block blew this guy's mind. You know what I mean? Because think of all the athleticism to pull that off in fucking 1943. You're chasing a guy down, and then you're jumping and blocking his shot. Like, that had to have been
Jim.
Fucking mind-blowing.
And your name
Jumping
is Jim
Pollard. Another incredible fucking nickname.
You're running and jumping. Oh, my fucking God. Yeah. In a fucking professional basketball game. Holy shit. But well, no, it was really interesting because it felt like I was learning so much about, like, you know, like these players. I felt like I was reading a textbook in a class that I really liked. You know what I mean? Like that's how it felt to me. But yeah, like, I mean, yeah.
Let's talk about the Bill Russell Celtics. I thought this was
your Paul Pierce moment, since we're going with the Celtics here, where you just had to got wheeled out.
I walked out under my own power. Thank you very much.
Hey, you had the Big Bob Burgers energy again, though, nigga. Like, that was, I was like, yeah, he had to definitely shake, nigga. He couldn't have.
I couldn't have waited five more minutes.
You couldn't have waited five more seconds, maybe, it seemed like, to me. But
no, 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 it was a measured walk. There was no hurry. We were okay.
Okay.
Trust me. Okay. I'm very aware of the spectrum.
You know your brown eye. Yeah. If nobody else knows your brown eye,
that's
it's
right.
You.
I was not jumping butt first onto the toilet. We're okay.
And the brown eye never lies. Okay.
I thought the Bill Russell Celtics chapter. These two chapters have me really excited for the rest of the book because I give so much more of a fuck about basically every other team in the book than I do about these first two. But the Bill Russell Celtics chapter I thought was great because you've heard so much about these guys and what they went through in Boston at the time, et cetera, et cetera. But the job he did of kind of making that come to life, I thought was incredible. And you definitely understand why Bill Russell did not want any fucking fans in the arena when he got his jersey retired in Boston. And also
for
just
sure.
Fuck Boston forever.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, you know, it definitely touched on the racism that Bill Russell encountered with the Celtics. You know, they were talking about how Celtics fans would, you know, yell slurs and shit at him. Like, bro, he plays for you. Like, what the fuck? Like, that's how irrational racists are, bro. Like, this motherfucker plays for you. He's a top two guy in the league during this time. It's just him and Wilt, you know, on that tier, and that's how you treat him. But I will say that a couple eye-opening things here. For one, I never knew that Havlicek technically didn't steal the ball on that fucking, you know, famous call. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Yeah. He deflected the inbound
and Sam Jones picked it up. But I guess Havlicek steals it. It has a more of a rank than Havlicek deflects it. So I guess we roll with that. But another thing, I had no idea about motherfucking Casey Jones. Like, I knew he was great. I knew he was a Hall of Famer. But I had no idea that Casey Jones. Okay, I'm going to read a quote from Bill Russell here. In the years that I played with the Celtics, in terms of total basketball skills, I'm not Casey Jones, Sam Jones. Sam Jones was the most skillful player that I ever played with, Russell said in an interview with the Celtics Nation website. At one point, we won a total of 8 consecutive NBA championships. And 6 times during that run, we asked Sam to take the shot that meant the season. If he didn't hit the shot, we were finished. We were going home empty-handed. He never missed. Like, how come he doesn't get all this Mr. Clutch shit? Like, you've had 6 season-saving game winners during the Celtics run, and I, like, this is my first time hearing of that. Did y'all
because
know about that?
Because because radio was so powerful that the broadcaster saying Havlicek stole the ball on a radio broadcast just became the cultural memory of America.
Yeah.
And because Bill Russell, to John's point about how much the game has changed and how unwatchable we would find these old games, Bill Russell broke the fundamentals of basketball by jumping on defense.
Yeah. Right, right.
Revolutionary. Who'd have thunk it?
Like, what the fuck? Yeah, right?
I mean, I know motherfuckers were just out there flat-footed, all hands up, defending for fucking 50 years when basketball was first invented. That is crazy.
I had done a lot of research when I did that Bob Cousy piece, so I kind of understood, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I knew about the racism, you know what I'm saying, with Russell and all that shit. And, like, but, like, the way he told it was like, it still was shocking to me. You know what I mean? Like, damn.
Yeah, like, I think we've all heard those stories about Bill Russell's significance and that, you know, oh, he dealt with racism in Boston. But to actually hear the stories of what that meant was I thought he did a great job of writing that out. Yeah, it's just the other thing that was crazy to me was they were saying that he only got to the Celtics because St. Louis was more racist than Boston at the time. And just you couldn't even dream of having a black basketball. Like, they wouldn't even be able to go through all this horrible shit because it just couldn't have happened. Like, that was crazy because there were a lot of black people living in St. Louis at that time, man. Like, that's fucking nuts.
I think that's still the case with St. Louis. You know what I mean? I think that St. Louis is it's the racist city I've lived in, and I lived in Alabama for 9 years. You know what I'm saying? So that says something. You know, and you might not see Confederate flags, but I got, you know, harassed by the cops way more and all that shit. You know what I'm saying? I felt racism more, you know what I'm saying, in St. Louis than any other place, but still my favorite place in the nation.
I think in of the world. Like, all the people I know from St. Louis are black, so I think of it as like a...
It's a black-ass city.
I think of it as a black city.
It's a very segregated-ass city.
Right.
Extremely segregated. You know what I mean? I don't have a white friend from St. Louis. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that, like a real... You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't hang with white people for real. Like, we would go to, like... We would be around them and we talk to them and shit. Like, but I wasn't, like, kicking it like that. They weren't my homies. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was... Bro, like, it was... It's a very segregated city, but so that doesn't surprise me at all.
Tyler, great pick on the book. What chapters are we reading for next week?
All right, so let's see.
Let's hit up 4 again. Let's hit 4 chapters again. Let's do the same thing.
So the Magic, Lakers, Bird, Celtics, the Bad Boys, and motherfucking MJ. Oh hell yeah, we getting into the motherfucking meat right here, fellas.
As much as we talk shit about MJ and all that shit, like on Twitter, not really, not anymore, of course, because it's fucking stupid. But I like all MJ content. I love everything that I can read or get my hands on with MJ. So I'm very excited about this.
All right, basketball's back, even in the book club. We're so excited to actually have games to talk about. Thank you for tapping in with us, and we will be back on Monday. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.